Chapter 9. They gathered in the upper reaches of the pride of the Emperor, in an observation bay that laid the immense starscape before the mortals who dared traverse its unimaginable gulfs. The Brotherhood of the Phoenix had not assembled since Istvan, its members too involved in their own gratification to bother with the affairs of others. Which was not to say that the observation deck went unused. Those who imbibed the toxically hallucinogenic cocktails brewed by apothecary Fabius found enlightenment in its infinite vistas, and many indulged their freshly awakened carnal hungers with vicarious feasts of flesh and blades. Discarded bodies and torn heaps of broken glass lay strewn throughout the bay, and the occasional moan issued from a jumbled pile of clothing and leather restraints. It had been a place of quiet reflection, where a warrior could meditate on the means by which he might draw closer to perfection. But now it was an arena of depravity, depthless horror, and indulgences beyond all constraints of morality. No one came here to better themselves, and the grand ideals and debates once bandied back and forth were now forgotten echoes, remembered by none and actively flouted by many. If anywhere on board the pride of the Emperor could be said to embody the utter desolation of the Emperor's children, it was this place. They arrived in ones and twos, intrigued enough by Lucius's summons to come in hopes of some diversion interesting enough to amuse them for a time. That he, so uninterested in any notions of brotherhood, had issued such a summons was reason enough to appear. And by the time he judged it wise to begin, Lucius counted 20 warriors before him. It was more than he had expected. First Captain Caeseron had come, as had Marius Verosian, and, more importantly, if Lucius's suspicions were confirmed, so had Apothecary Fabius. Calimos Daemon and Chrysander were here, and Ruin of the 21st. Heliton and Abranx came also, and several others whose names Lucius had not bothered to remember. They regarded him with mild amusement, for he had always been held in faint contempt by the Order. Lucius struggled to hold his temper in check. "Why have you called us here?" demanded Calimos, his downcast face stitched with rings and toothed hooks. "This brotherhood has little meaning for us now." "I need you to hear something," said Lucius, staring at First Captain Caeseron.
"Hear what?"
bellowed Verosian, deaf to how loud he spoke.
"Fulgrim is not who he claims to be," said Lucius,
knowing he had to snare their interest early.
"He is an impostor."
Chrysander laughed, and the skin of his face cracked with the force of it. Others joined in, but Lucius's anger was mitigated by the fact that he saw Caeseron and Fabius narrow their eyes in interest.
"I shall kill you for those words,"
snarled Daemon, swinging a heavy, spike-headed maul from its shoulder harness. A monstrous weapon, one impact would crush any foe unlucky enough to be on the receiving end. Ruin circled around behind Lucius, and he heard the whisper of an assassin's dagger being drawn. He tasted the bitter tang of the toxins on its blade and licked his lips.
"It sounds preposterous, I know,"
said Lucius. His life hung on the line here. It was one thing to defeat a handful of Phoenix Guard, quite another to take on 20 captains of the Legion. He grinned at the thought of such a fight, even as he knew he would not survive it.
"Let him speak," said Fabius in sibilant tones. "I would hear what the swordsman has to say. I am curious to see what has made him think like this."
"Aye, let the whelp speak,"
said Caeseron, moving to stand beside Daemon. Marius Verosian unlimbered his sonic cannon, its destructive potential filling the observation deck with a bone-rattling bass note as he worked his scarred fingers over the harmonic coils. The rest of the Brotherhood spread out around him, and even as Lucius appreciated his mortal danger, he felt wonderfully alive. Chrysander ran a hooked tongue over his lips, his black eyes like those of the Primarch, as he slid a red-bladed dagger from a flesh sheath cut into the meat of his bare thigh.
"I'll have your skin, Lucius,"
said the warrior, licking stagnant blood from the blade. Kalymos unhooked a coiled whip from a beringed belt at his waist, its entire length barbed with the gleaming razor teeth of a Carnadon and tipped with an Inuit pain amplifier. It writhed like a snake, pulsing with an intestinal motion as it wrapped itself around its wielder's leg. Abranks drew two swords from shoulder scabbards, as his blood brother, Heliton, slipped hooked cestus gauntlets over his fists. They circled him in ever-decreasing rings, elaborating on the violations they would wreak upon him for wasting their time. Each captain sought to outdo the other in the depths of horror he outlined, and Lucius forced himself to ignore the barbs.
"Speak, Lucius," said Caeseron. "Convince us that we have all been lied to."
Lucius stared into Caeseron's eyes, meeting his dead gaze and hoping he had an ally in the first captain.
"I don't have to," said Lucius. "Do I?"
"You are foolish if you think I won't kill you, swordsman," replied Caeseron.
"I know you can kill me, first captain, but that's not what I meant."
"Then what did you mean?"
growled Kalymos, cracking his whip and leaving a bloody line carved into the deck plates. Lucius scanned the faces around him. Some were as they had been before Istvan, perfect and patrician, while grotesque flesh masks or androgynous porcelain harlequins hid many others. Still more were disfigured with gouged wounds, repeated burns, chemical scars, or multiple piercings.
"Because you already know, don't you, first captain?" said Lucius.
Caeseron grinned. No mean feat for a man with little remaining of his face he could call his own. The look of gleeful madness Lucius saw in his eyes confirmed the suspicion that had begun to form on Prismatica. Caeseron already knew that Fulgrim was not who he claimed. But one ally among these warriors would not save Lucius if he could not convince the rest.
"You must have seen it, brothers," said Lucius, as Daemon began swinging his maul around his body in tight arcs. "The Phoenician speaks, but it is not his voice. He tells of our glorious battles like he wasn't even there. He barely remembers the war against the Lair, and the victories of which he does speak sound like he reads them from a history book."
"Old wars,"
sneered Ruin, tasting the poison on his blade.
"Wars won in another's name. What do I care how they're remembered?"
"Who I was is forgotten," said Heliton. "Only what I am now is important."
"A bad dream from which I am awakened," added Abranks. "If the Primarch forgets it too, so much the better."
Lucius drew his sword as the ring of warriors tightened on him. Heliton slammed a spiked fist into his shoulder, hard enough to hurt, not enough to provoke a reaction. Lucius curbed his natural instinct to take the bastard's head. Kalymos's whip cracked, and Lucius grimaced as it scored a red line at his shoulder, leaving a white tooth embedded in the plate. Ruin's dagger licked the groove cut by Kalymos's whip, and Lucius felt the nerves in his shoulder spasm as the viral toxin bathed his nerves in fire. He staggered, seeing bright colours dance before his eyes.
"I saw the portrait in La Fenice," he said through gritted teeth. "It's him. It's him before the massacre."
He sensed a pause in the captain's murderous attentions and let the words pour from him in a stream of rabid consciousness.
"You all saw it. The glory of its life," he said. "It was Fulgrim as he was always meant to be, a shining avatar of perfection, a celebration of his transcendent beauty. It was everything we aspire to be, a vision we were compelled to worship. It was all that we beheld of beauty and true gratification and bliss. I have seen it, and that vision is gone. It's as though they've swapped places, like twin souls displaced by unnatural means.
If we do not follow the Phoenician, then who has commanded us since the battle on the Black Sands?
Demanded Calymos. I do not know. Not for sure, said Lucius. I don't understand it all, but the power we saw in the Maraviglia, I saw it take the flesh of that mortal singer and rework it like wax before a flame. You all saw it. The power Fulgrim showed us makes soft clay of flesh, and who is to say what limits it has? Something else came through at Istvan. Something powerful enough to overcome the mind of a Primarch.
Lord Fulgrim called such beings demons, said Marius Verosian. An old word, but an apt one. They scream in the nights we travel between the stars and scratch at the hull of the ship with nightmares and dark promises. They make glorious music in my skull.
Lucius nodded. Yes, he said. A demon. That's it. You all saw what they could do in La Fenice. The powers they have. Lord Fulgrim has such powers now. I saw him unleash a curse upon a Mechanicum battle engine on Prismatica. Its shields were down, and without even touching it, he caused every living thing inside it to grow and mutate in a storm of flesh that ripped the war machine apart from the inside. Lord Fulgrim was mighty, but even he wasn't that powerful. Only the Crimson King has such powers.
Lord Fulgrim is no sorcerer,
cried Abranx, lunging at Lucius with his swords extended. Lucius batted away the clumsy attack, and his riposte gave Abranx a neat scar on his cheek for his trouble.
I didn't say he was,
said Lucius, dropping into a defensive crouch.
Listen, we knew the War Master was treating with such things, but this is a step too far.
Caeseron pushed the other captains aside and gripped Lucius by the edges of his breastplate.
You think Horus Lupercal is behind this?
He snapped.
I don't know. Maybe, said Lucius. Or maybe Fulgrim went further than any of us thought he ever could.
Caeseron glanced over at Fabius, who had remained impassive throughout the unfolding drama. The first captain drew a curved gutting knife and placed the tip of the blade against the pulsing artery at Lucius's neck. Sensing bloodshed, Damon's hand slipped down the length of his hammer's shaft in preparation for a crushing blow.
What say you, Fabius?
Demanded Caeseron.
Is there any merit to the swordsman's words, or should I kill him right now?
Fabius ran a hand through his thin white hair, his pinched features belying the strength in his limbs. The hissing, clicking Chirurgian machine that squatted at his back like a parasite reached over his shoulder, caressing Lucius's cheek with a slender blade. Lucius felt its feather-light touch, the blade so sharp that he only knew he had been cut when the blood ran over his lips. The apothecary's dark eyes glittered with amusement, and he nodded thoughtfully as though weighing the outcomes of a trial by combat where the fighters were equally matched.
I too have seen things that have given me cause to wonder what our beloved Primarch is becoming,
said Fabius, his desert-parched voice like the hiss of a snake's belly on sand.
What manner of things?
Said Caeseron.
A change in the composition of his blood and flesh, replied Fabius. It is as though his molecular structure has begun to dissolve the bonds linking its constituent parts into a cohesive whole.
What could cause such a thing?
Fabius shrugged.
Nothing of this world, he said, with a grin of dreadful appetite. It is quite fascinating, you understand. It is as though his form is preparing for some great ascension, a wondrous shedding of a redundant form as his flesh is remade into something extraordinary.
And you never thought to mention this,
asked Lucius, still very much aware of the blade at his throat. Just by speaking, he caused its monomolecular tip to pierce his skin.
It was too soon to speak,
snapped Fabius.
I do not pause in my observations, as you would not pause in the midst of a duel.
You mean you believe him?
Asked Marius Verosian, his stretched face unable to hide the revulsion he felt at the thought of their master's body being hijacked by another. Marius had ever been the loyal lapdog of the Primarch, unquestioningly following his orders and never once doubting their course.
I do, Verosian,
said Fabius.
My research is unfinished, but I believe that another entity resides within the Phoenician and prepares to transform him into some new image.
Lucius took grim pleasure in his vindication as the first captain's knife was removed from his throat. The circling captains paused in their threatening dance, shaken and enthralled that the wild claims of the swordsman had been backed up by no lesser figure than Fabius. Caeseron lowered him to the deck and released his grip. Lucius found it grimly amusing that it had been their very loyalty to Fulgrim that had seen them cast as traitors in this rebellion. Blind, unquestioning devotion to one luminous being had been the origin of their damnation in the eyes of the Imperium. The irony was not lost on any of them.
How long before this transformation occurs?
Asked Caeseron. Fabius shook his head.
It is impossible to say for sure, but I would expect this pupating stage of development to be rapid. Indeed, the change in physicality might already be underway. It could be too late to stop it.
But it might not, said Lucius.
Nothing is certain,
admitted Fabius.
Then we have to try,
stated the first captain.
If Fulgrim is no longer master of his own body, then we have to get him back. We are his sons, and whatever has claimed his flesh must be captured and cast out of his body. Lord Fulgrim is our gene father, and I take orders from no one but him.
A charge of febrile excitement swept through the gathered captains, and Lucius let out a shuddering sigh. He had convinced the others of his suspicions while keeping his blood inside his body and his head upon his shoulders. So, a pertinent question, said Lucius. How do we go about capturing a Primarch?